Court order.
Chairman?
Let's see, have you taken the vote, have you taken an inconclusive vote on the deletion of seven?
No.
No, it failed.
Failed.
Failed, okay, that's right, all right.
Mr. Chairman, just for clarification, that means then that over on page, on page three, line five, that's a $100 fine too, so everything, any violation is a $100 fine.
Section eight.
Question on section eight, Mr. Chairman.
Is there from there?
One or another of the witnesses. Representative Gardner and I were wondering whether or not if you can apply this to a policy renewal. If that renewal is just, let's say, in a limited sense, you're only renewing part of the policy or only part of it is up for renewal, the rest of it continues into effect. Is there any constitutional problem about retroactivity or the obligation of contract or any such thing, or is this boilerplate for insurance?
I can speak to them doing it in health insurance, done all the time.
The other consideration, I think, Representative Frohnmeyer, is that the disclosure requirements of Section 5 are separate from the policy and simply ask for a disclosure of the provisions of the policy which already exist.
Yeah, okay.
And
I hear you.
And the law contained within this act.
You're right.
There is a rather serious problem, though. I see a Section 8 the way it's worded and as it relates to 5, and that is if the problem was simply to include the language in all new policies that were issued, that would be one thing. But to say that all renewal policies also, which don't involve the issuance of a policy itself, but just a renewal notice, that creates an added burden that I think is perhaps unnecessary, and I could see where you might want to amend this language in 5 and 8 to cover that situation. The figures that I have on that is as follows. There are about 1,200,000 policies in existence in Oregon. Now, if this law went into effect as written here, it would require each company to send a renewal, when they send a renewal notice, or to send a letter out, at least to the effect that the new law requires such and such. If you're going to make that disclosure, not on a new policy, but just to send out a letter to that effect. And that would, at 13 cents a letter, would amount to $156,000. And I would think that the problem could be avoided if Section 5.2 simply read that every motor vehicle insurance policy and then included the language on original issue in place of the word issued, so that it was clear that it was only on a new policy of insurance that this language had to be included.
Representative Gardner.
Aren't you sending out a renewal notice with that 13-cent stamp on it? Couldn't you just put an additional sheet of paper in there?
Well, you send out a renewal notice, but you don't know if the insured is going to necessarily renew. You send a letter saying your policy renewal is coming up at a certain time. Different companies have different policies with respect to it. But until the insured actually decides that he is going to renew the policy, then.
I would think, Mr. Chairman, that they sent out the notice to them. Some of you did not renew. They probably would be just giving them a
piece. It's moot.
You know, it's moot at that point. If the people did renew, they'd have got their notice at that point. I don't see the additional expense other than perhaps the paper and the printing for sending a lot of renewals.
Further discussion on 8. Section 9.
Mr. Chairman, it seems to me we ought to discuss 9 and 10 together.
Yeah, okay.
Because it's just going to require a lot of approvals to go through the Insurance Commissioner's office. And Les isn't here, and he'll probably panic when he sees it. But I think we've got to discuss the phasing and the timing of it so that the companies that have to comply with this have time to have complied before before they start issuing policies on the actual effective date of the requirements. I take it there's no disagreement with you or Tom on that, is there, Hank?
It would be our suggestion, Representative Frohnmayer, that Section 4, we recommended 60 days from... We're talking about Section 9, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Well, within the context of the implementation date, if the emergency clause were to be struck, which I think, in view of the problems with getting the information out in Section 5, would be necessary, that really... Section 4 could be operative 60 days after passage of the bill, not necessarily enactment, and Section 5 would probably take no longer than 90 to 120 days to implement it. The sign requirement, the language is there, it's a matter of ordering a sign. The development of the disclosure in Section 5 is going to take some time, and we agree with that. So I think Sections 4 and Section 5 should be dealt with separately in relationship to the, you know, the date that the act becomes effective.
Sure. Representative Gardner.
I would think, perhaps Mr. Wheatley could respond to this. I would think that perhaps January 1st, 1978 would probably be an appropriate time for the disclosure requirements to take effect. That's a good 6 months.
I think that would be more reasonable. And of course, probably does have to be approved by the insurance commissioner somewhere along the line.
6 months is a reasonable period of time to do that.
Were you relating that, Representative Gardner, to subsection 2 and not subsection 1, though, of section 5? Because subsection 1 simply requires an oral warning. And I think it would be meaningful in terms of making the bill work to have that go into effect immediately upon passage of the bill. Subsection 2 requires the development of language.
Yeah, that would be fine. I think it's the disclosure statement that's going to take some time to develop. And thank you, points for taking
that. Tom, Mr. Chairman, if I may. I recall, even having been in the legislature last time and worked on legislation, that in other areas when I then thereafter had to give advice on it, that I had either forgotten about specifics of it or there'd been some subsection that I hadn't really needed to worry about while I was voting on it. And a couple of them had emergency clauses, and they were in effect, some of those were in effect even before the legislature adjourned, but the advance sheets weren't out for 90 days, 120 days. And where you've got a disclosure requirement, I think there's an awful big public information problem to the people who have to comply, particularly when you've got a violation penalty attached to it. And for that reason, I think I'm opposed to an emergency clause on any of the provisions that supplement require a penalty, at least until there's some opportunity for the public to know that.
I think you misunderstood me, Representative Frohnmayer. We were recommending that the emergency clause be deleted.
Okay.
And that simply subsection 1 of sub 5 be effective on the date of the act.
Okay.
And that subsection 4 be effective on the date of the act. And that subsection 2 of subsection 5 be effective January 1st, 1978 would be fine with us.
Okay. Let me see if I got this straight. You got different parts of the bill becoming effective at a selected different period, a group of time periods.
Okay. For my clarification in drafting, seems like what you just said was the whole act becomes effective at its normal time, except for subsection 5, subsection 2, which is January 1, 1978. Other than that, the whole thing goes into operation as any other.
That's
correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Is that the committee's on?
Yeah.
That's right. All right.
In other words, the notice that effective. Everything else, January 1 next.
No.
Well, it's restated those.
And as I understand what was just said, the entire bill goes into effect, what, 90 days, 60 days after passage?
90 days.
Okay, after adjournment. And subsection 2, section 5, does not go into effect until the first day of 1978.
Heard everybody? Question is on the motion to amend. Well, let's see, I guess we'd be amending section 9 and deleting section 10 to achieve that effect.
Again, I'm sorry to be so obtuse.
Section 9 would be amended to read, subsection 2 of section 5 of this act becomes operative.
It won't be section 5.
You know where any number is.
Takes effect January 1, 1971.
Okay, now.
Is that 1978 or 79? 78.
Now, that's subsection 2 of present section 5.
Yeah. And if that
now, we're renumbering, you know.
That's okay. I'll
okay, but that's the statement approved by the commissioner.
Right.
Right? Okay. Then, does the posted notice take effect any other time than the rest of the bill?
90 days after adjournment.
Okay, then section
4. That's the same
four.
As the rest of the
bill. Section 4. All right, then we struck, what did we do, strike section 8?
No, that's a separate section.
Chairman,
section 5-2 is 5-2 will take effect January 1, 1978.
But in effect, you do strike section 9. It becomes.
Yeah, but section 8 now.
Well, I think we've decided to. I think the policy is clearly articulated.
The wording. The numbering question is staff.
Yeah, but there are at least three effective dates.
No.
Two.
Only two.
Forget what's in the bill now, because we're deleting, really, in effect, deleting 9 and 10 and scrapping them and starting over.
They'll be deleted. 9 and 10 will be deleted.
And they have to have the sign up beginning of October?
90 days after the
sign. And they have to.
Okay, but let's go back to Section 8 for a minute. When, after what date must all insurance policies contain the material here? I thought
January 1.
No, that's June.
That's my point. We're talking three different dates. That's January 1, 78.
Sorry, you're right. Good point. Sorry.
I just.
Any question?
Is there a problem?
No.
Okay. Everybody clear? Question is on the motion.
And the motion is talking about all these effective dates only, right?
That's right.
Everybody raise a vote? Any objection to the motion?
Yes. I don't like it.
But so do this to record as objection.
I never thought
such a hard further discussion part. Of the amendments. Let's see, where are we? We've been working with the printed amendments, basically, of the.
Chair, we can motion to adopt amendments as amended.
Yeah, I'm just trying to make. Yeah, I guess that would be the way. Any objection? The discussion of the bill as amended.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Wheatley and Mr. Jaqua did submit a whole raft of amendments that dealt with the industry itself that apparently track with the New York law, or at least another law that's in New York. Regulating the practices. Now, they've not spoken to those, and I don't know whether the committee's in a mood to hear them addressed, but I think that in fairness we ought to at least have it before us that there is another potential half of the bill. And I'd I'd kind of like to hear at least brief comment from the opposing parties with respect to them.
Mr. Chairman, might I address myself to that? I think you all were delivered. For the record, my name is Bob Davis, representing Allstate. You were all delivered this document some time ago, which included a whole series of amendments, about 7 pages of them. In my judgment, the committee has already acted on a number of them, not as the amendments were proposed, but in any event, you've already made the policy decisions there. The part that has not been addressed appears on page 2 of the section called Proposed Amendments, and deals with the relationship between the out-of-body shop and the customer. Mr. Jakewood is bringing some more of these in case you've left them in the office or something, but just quickly, as I sat through all of the testimony on the hearings on this, it appeared to be that the major problem was some improper activity on the part of a body shop, or inadequate repairs, the substitution of used materials for new materials, things of that type, which were being done by the body shops. On page 2 of these printed amendments, we address that issue by requiring, by suggesting a new section 6, which would require that all work done by a motor vehicle body and frame repair shop should be recorded on invoice, and this invoice shall describe the service work done and the parts supplied and so forth. Upon the request of any customer, a motor vehicle repair shop shall make an estimate in writing and shall not charge for work done or parts supplied in excess of the estimate without the consent of the customer. And then some prohibitions against certain kinds of things that body shops cannot do, and provides penalties for the violation of these sections. It would seem to me, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, that we had articulated a problem concerning the work done in shops, and the bill doesn't really address itself to that at all. It addresses itself rather to the relationship between the insurer and the insured. And if we're going to have a bill that really gets to the problem here, that we should then address ourselves in this bill to those activities and business practices on the part of repair shops that the witnesses found so reprehensible as they were testifying. Now, I recognize that the people here represent only about 20% of the body shops in the state, and that the other 80% are apparently not represented by anyone here. But I don't think there's anything in these amendments that are contrary to good business practice. We simply impose a responsibility on a repair shop to do the work in the manner in which they say they do, and would provide criminal penalties for deceptive trade practices in the sense of substituting used material for new and so forth. I think rather than my trying to read each one of them and go through, if you turn to page 2, starting with the words about halfway down the page, on page 3, delete lines 26 through 34, and insert the following new section, section 6. And that would include pages 2, 3, and 4.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Richard?
Could I ask committee counsel if the relating clause of this bill are just relating to motor vehicles?
Yeah.
All right.
You're fine.
All right. Thank you.
Bob, doesn't subsection 2 on page 3 require a free written estimate on demand?
Yes.
Isn't that a bit strenuous, particularly on the small small repair shop or one that might say, gee, we don't, you know, our estimator's off for today, or we don't repair that kind of car, and this would literally let someone not only go shopping, but to require on pain of a criminal penalty that they provide you with a written estimate. It seems to me that goes too far in the other direction.
Well, I think you're talking of sub 2.
Yeah.
I think that I may have spoken too quickly. I think that only becomes a violation that would only occur if he actually did the work and then did something that is in excess of the invoice. This obviously is directed toward trying to let an individual know what's going to be done to his car.
Bob, excuse me. The question was, doesn't that mandate whether or not the shop ultimately gets the job?
As I read it, it does.
It may very well. And we could amend that to be sure that it applies in those instances in which the work is done.
Mr. Chairman, might I make two comments? Number one, we're already subject to the unfair trade practices, unlike our adversaries. Everything that's contained within their amendment is already the subject of the Unfair Trade Practices Act. It would be our opinion that this is basically boilerplate calculated to, you know, derail the bill late in the session. We've never seen these amendments before. Allstate and State Farm talked about how important it was to them to maintain their drive-in claim centers. And it appears to me that the requirement for a written estimate from a body shop applies diametrically in the face of what they said earlier. And frankly, I find it difficult to really consider that these amendments are offered in good faith in relationship to what they said previously.
So I guess since my good faith has been challenged, I will point out to the committee that these were delivered individually to the committee several weeks ago. We made no attempt to come in at the last moment with anything. I'm getting a little tired of the charges of bad faith. If these are boilerplate, just put them into law. They apparently won't hurt anyone then. But it will give an opportunity to have a standard of conduct on the part of the auto body shops, which they all allege that they follow anyway. And we feel that without that regulation, we haven't really addressed the problem.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Rutherford?
Well, Tom, when you say that this is already contained in the law, do you mean that there are general provisions in the law that would take care of this sort of problem, or do you mean specifically these things are contained?
The Unfair Trade Practices Act would certainly cover installing a used part when you build for a new part. It not only vests an action in the part of an insured or a car owner, but it gives the Attorney General concurrent jurisdiction to deal with the whole auto fraud repair area. I think you've seen quite a bit of activity on the part of the Attorney General, not relating to body shops specifically, but to the installation of new parts when they weren't needed, and activities such as that.
How about this provision with respect to invoicing and so on?
The
Section 1 of
the I think in terms of Section 1, if you were to take a look at a standard body shop invoice, you would find great detailed specificity in terms of an estimate. Body shops write a line-by-line estimate for the part number, the cost of the part, and the amount of labor involved in installing it. It's the only way any business can operate with any degree of cost efficiency. And frankly, it's already an industrial practice, but it seems inconsistent to me that people who want to deal with controlling the cost by virtue of writing the estimate would then turn around and assert that the body shop should do the same thing over again and create an instant challenge between the carrier and the insured. Now, there are people here, if you wish to investigate this subject further, who are in the business day after day and can speak to the specific technical points. I notice also that their amendments include punitive damages, which it's my understanding they opposed in relationship to actions against them. And, you know, if you chose to pursue their amendments, it'd be my suggestion that, you know, we treat likes like.
Chairman.
Representative Frommeyer.
Just to clear the air, I don't think that the amendments were offered in bad faith. It is true that, at least the committee members, and for all I know, the Senate committee members were supplied with these proposed amendments some time ago, Tom. I didn't know.
Well,
I had assumed that you were privy to them. I certainly
no, we have never seen these. We have never seen these before.
On the second, I want to get to a specific point, Mr. Chairman. That is sub C on page 3, which says, which would make it a penalty, and again, we put aside the issue of what the penalty ought to be, and I retain my view on punitive damages irrespective of who's asking for them. It is forbidden to ask an insured or require an insured to reveal whether the policy provides for a deductible. Now, is that something, number one, that's covered by the unfair trade practices law, or two, that ought to be?
What was that specifically?
Asking an insured whether or not they have a deductible on their policy while you're going
back. The question is that covered now by unfair trade practices? If it isn't, should it be?
I can't answer that question.
Well, that can't answer the first question. The second question is, should it be in your opinion?
Well, I don't see that it's an unreasonable inquiry, particularly in view of the fact that, you know, deductibles are going up as premium rates have gone up because of the, you know, the high cost of crash parts, you know, such as, I mean, we have bumpers now that cost $400 and $500.
I think the reason for the provision, the reason that someone would ask if they have deductible is because they want to know if they're going to get paid and how they're going to get paid, and I think that's a reasonable inquiry.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Blumenauer.
Not meaning to foreshorten by any stretch of imagination our discussion of these, but Representative Richards raised a point that I thought was valid. I'd like to get some determination on whether the in our judgment, the relating clause of this bill is such that we could incorporate these amendments into. I'm wondering if there might be another bill in committee that we could separate the issues. I think what Mr. Davis has brought forth is a valid. I think these are valid provisions. They may or may not already be covered. There's evidently some question in Mr. Fender's mind whether one of these elements is. I would not unnecessarily like to tie up either the development of either of these two concepts. I'd like to proceed with 718 and perhaps use this incorporate it into another bill. I'm sure we must have a carcass of some discarded bill in this committee.
Can't send out any House bills, so it would have to be in the Senate bill for the go at all.
There's an administrative problem, Representative Blumenauer, and that is that this committee will almost certainly not have time to return to this subject matter this session. We have an awful lot of work to do, and it's my hope that we can finish with this matter today.
Okay. Mr. Kim?
Now, okay. I think that the motor vehicle relating clause, as far as that issue goes, is broad enough to encompass these amendments. That doesn't answer the question whether they should be in there. Now, if the committee feels that further testimony is going to be required on these amendments, then as far as the chair is concerned, they will have to be considered dead for the session. This committee hasn't had the time to do it. If the committee wishes to proceed to action on the amendments, it's my wish we do it now. I'm not trying to frustrate the amendments. I'm just saying we don't have time to be hearing them. We just don't have time. Well, this committee's met 14 times this week. We'll meet all day tomorrow. It's going to meet 14 times probably next week. It has the Juvenile Code, 9 or 10 other Senate bills. We can't do it.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lindman.
I move the adoption of, in concept, the amendments contained in Section 6.
Now, are you including in that sub 2?
With clarifying language.
that makes it clear that someone just can't drop in out of the sky and coerce an estimate in the event the person doesn't want to, doesn't want the business.
I don't think that was...
To the motion, Mr. Chairman.
Hold on just a minute, Ted. Your clarification in sub 2 goes to what does what?
Well, as I read it, the person has to give a written estimate, even if they don't want the business.
Change it to man.
And I the only change I think would be necessary is one that just, if they choose to, maybe simply just changing the shall to may would be sufficient. But I don't want to force somebody to, under the sanctions set forth here, to be forced to require a written estimate.
All right, let's put the motion before us. The motion is to adopt the amendments. Now, Representative Blumenauer moves to amend the amendments, subsection 2, by changing the word from line 2, shall to may. Discussion.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Lombard.
Now, the triggering device there in the first place is the request of the customer. And so, why not leave it with that?
Excuse me, just one second. And if I may restate it, Dennis suggested something that's more, it's before commencing any work, any repair work, they shall, upon request, supply the written.
An estimate in writing?
Yes. If that's, right, that's, well, that was a thrust of what I was trying to get at. And that would be my first amendment.
Not 2 minutes, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, now, the discussion now, Representative Ugas, is in order to use that amendment to the amendment.
I think it's not unreasonable in view of all the testimony we've heard and the problem that prevails with regard to charlatans putting in and charging and things like this. And I think we've only partially dealt with the problem if we don't deal in some fashion with this. So I think moving it to the time period just prior to actually saying, okay, go ahead and do the work, you got a written thing here. It says how much they'll do and how much they'll charge.
Question.
They go beyond that, they have to. No, that's all right. I just think it's real.
Question on the motion. First motion to amend the amendments.
Mr. Chairman, can I just make one comment? It says in here on the bottom of Section 6, the motor vehicle body and frame repair shop shall make available to the customer upon timely written demand all replaced parts and so on. And there's a requirement that the invoices be given to the customer. Now, one of the only concern that we would have with that section is in the case of a car that is left for repairs, like on a vacation accident. And remember, the carriers said we need to have the ability to recommend a shop when someone has a vacation accident. And you'll find, I think if you go through these amendments, all throughout them there are some severe problems in terms of the vacation accident situation when you apply these particular provisions in terms of meeting the paperwork requirements and providing all the necessary invoices. And I would hope that we could take at least a look at those particular problems before we go ahead on this.
Well, after this amendment is voted on, I would move to strike that whole sentence. I intend to.
Question on the amendments, Mr. Chairman.
Is there further discussion? Is there an objection to the amendment?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Blumenauer.
Yes, I would move, I agree with Representative Rutherford's analysis that it might be reasonable for people to inquire into the deductible provisions just simply to get some sense of the method of payment that might have some impact on people in the decision they make. And so I would move the deletion of sub C, 3 sub C.
Further discussion? Any objection?
Chairman?
Sim Lombard.
I just have a quick explanation from the proponents of this as to reasons for that provision.
Well, let me see if I can anticipate your answer. Your answer would be that if they can inquire as to the deductible, and if they determine that it's an insurance company, how much of the freight is paid by an insurance company, that tends to
inflate the estimate. The larger the proportion that's being paid by a carrier, the more likely the estimate will be inflated.
Plus the opportunity for those so inclined to assure the customer that we'll make this so that we'll take care of your deductible. We'll make this estimate high enough to take care of it. There is that opportunity.
How do you mean take care of it?
To return to the customer the amount of the deductible.
Oh, I mean a bogus amount of equivalent.
I think these
set
are
back to the customer.
Yeah, I mean I see where you're coming from, but I think Bill's right about this. There may be reasonable occasions on which you should inquire after or the deductible would be mentioned. I hate to lock it in concrete, Bob, but I see the problem you're addressing.
But I don't know, we have a good case here of it, but
question. Mr. Chairman, could I just ask one further thing? I don't remember the bill number, but there was a bill in House Consumer and Business Affairs that dealt with this whole issue of laying out very clearly the costs in a detailed analysis. Now, Mr. Llewellyn was there, and they opposed the bill on behalf of Farmers Insurance, as I remember. Now, he's in the audience. Perhaps he might be able to remember the bases upon which Farmers opposed that bill, because some of the questions that arise, it was House Bill 2085. You get into question of, at the bottom of Section 6, it says, the motor vehicle body and frame repair shop shall make available to the customer upon timely written demand all replaced parts, components, or equipment, excepting any, da-da-da-da. Now, does that mean you keep all wrinkled fenders, hoods, doors, for how long?
That's not germane to our issue. I'm going to move to delete that whole sentence.
I want each of you sitting there to just address the amendment pin.
Well, the amendment is all of this new language. Isn't that
correct? No, not yet. The amendment is to delete sub C. Now, that's the thing I want any comment on right now.
Sub C.
That's the motion pending before the committee. Sub C of 3.
Mr. Chairman. I don't want to cut anybody off. If one of the witnesses has a comment.
Well, I don't mean to be rude to the witnesses, but I do want you to just deal with the amendment to the amendment that's pending at any given point. And that's the one that's pending now.
In other words, we're amending.
You have.
We're amending the proposed amendments before they've been adopted. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
We have not, I don't believe, made a motion to formally bring these amendments before us.
Yeah.
And a vote.
Yeah, it was done without.
Motion was made to adopt the votes, then proceeded to start taking amendments.
Now, Mr. Chairman, 2 sub C, specific amendment to the amendments.
3 sub C.
3 sub C.
Delete 3
Wait,
sub C.
To that. I don't object. I think it's entirely appropriate for the repairman to inquire into the amount of deductible. But I would like to see a provision which says it's illegal to kick back the price, any price that's paid in order to cover the deductible.
I would think that is an unfair trade practice. I don't think we need a specific statute for that.
I think it would be insurance fraud.
Crime. Some of the other.
I'm sure it's a crime. Chairman, I call for the question on the amendment.
What about that? Is there further discussion? Is there any
objection? Chairman?
Senator Frommer.
Move deletion of the sentence on page 2 beginning, the motor vehicle body and frame shop shall make available to the customer, et cetera.
The entire sentence.
The entire sentence.
So Frommer moves section 6, third line up from the bottom, delete the sentence beginning, the motor vehicle body, et cetera, to the end of that first subparagraph of section 6. Is there any discussion? Any objection?
Mr. Chairman?
Then from that.
Move that the penalty sections be deleted and that conceptually that the penalties be made to conform to those penalties already in the bill.
Yes. Further discussion? Any objection? Any discussion on the amendments as amended?
Move their adoption.
And now, that's one quick thing. Let's check the effective date of these amendments.
Mr. Chairman, I would, as part of my
I guess they would just
motion, we would assimilate that into the effective date with respect to disclosure and
In effect, we're just adopting proposed Section 6, and we conform everything else to the...
Well, except that these are set in terms of things that you shouldn't do, so therefore they're a violation, but they feed right into violation here.
All right, so the violation sections would be amended to pick up appropriate numbered sections.
One possible question.
No, it won't work because you'll have to be a separate penalty section.
Why?
Because in what we're talking about the insured in the bill as we've adopted so far, and these would have to set up a separate agreed party, which could in some cases be, I suppose, the insurer who paid directly or the insured also.
On page 3.
Is that right, John?
Mr. Chairman, just for clarification, on page 3 of these, it says, upon the request of any customer, a motor vehicle body and frame shop shall make an estimate. Did you adopt the language may?
Yes.
No.
Well,
essentially the thrust of it, if I may interpret it, is that if you've given a written estimate, you can't go beyond that estimate without the consent of the customer.
Before commencing work, if I may, before commencing repair work, they shall.
Upon request. Okay, now I would just like to interject a couple of issues here. What happens when the insured, who is the customer now, not the insurance carrier, we're talking about the customer, is out of the area or is unavailable and the work is not going in progress. The bill that we had before us in Consumer and Business Affairs had percentile latitudes in terms of if there's a need to make a change because there's hidden damage. And hidden damage is a very common phenomena in an automobile collision repair. You can't always see everything that is damaged. If the insured is not available, and this does not speak to the carrier, we're speaking to the customer now.
Mr. Chairman.
Ms.
Representative Miller.
We're not talking here about how accurate,
No, we're saying here he doesn't get paid, Representative Luminary, if he has not given the customer a written estimate, which means he can't call up on the telephone and say, we found that the alternator was broken off in the process of fixing your automobile. And so if he goes ahead and fixes the alternator without specific written approval, he doesn't get paid.
It doesn't say that. It says, shall not charge for work done or parts supplied in excess of the estimate without the consent of such customer.
Well, I think when you speak up here, though, in writing, you imply that consent means in writing.
The estimate must be in writing, but the consent.
No. From a practical point of view, if you litigate something like that, you have a written estimate, and then you go through the, well, I called them on the telephone situation.
Is that any different than the problem you have today?
We don't have that problem significantly today.
How can it be any different than today? You give a person an estimate, you open it up, and you find out that something's damaged that you didn't expect.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you call them today, or do you just do it?
No, we call them.
So how is that any different than what this?
Well, you've set out a statutory provision that creates an inference that both have to be in writing.
clearly not.
Specifically,
at least not my understanding,
rebut that presumption on the record. That is not what it says, and that isn't what it means.
Well, as long as that's part of the legislative record, we'd have no objection to it. Because it is a continuing problem.
Right. Mr. Chairman, I would ask that if anybody in the committee disagrees with interpretation that the consent need not be in writing, that they say so for the record. I'd like the record to show that.
That's the intention of the committee. Call for the discussion, members of the amendment.
Mr. Chairman, one final point on that, and that is, I notice this says upon the request of any customer. Now we're assuming
that language has been changed, Tom. Before commencing work
and upon.
Now that means we have to write a separate estimate after Allstate or State Farm has written their own at a drive-in center? If it's requested by the customer.
Right, that's the sense of your amendment.
Well, would there be a provision for charging a nominal charge for that estimate? To take care of the smaller body shops who don't necessarily have estimators and rely upon Allstate and State Farm's estimate? I mean, that's what they testified is done in business, and that there are many small body shops who can't afford to hire estimators. And they have consistently beaten that drum. Now, if we have to provide for an estimate to work with the drive-in program, well, then I think we should be paid for making that estimate because we're going to have to obviously hire someone to do it.
Number
one. Yeah. It seems to me there'd be nothing to prevent a person from writing off on an estimate that's already been provided for, look at it, say it seems reasonable. I think in the course of business, your people would do that. And that seems to me to be such that would comply with the intent here. I see no need to amend the suggestion any further.
Question is on the amendments as amended. Is there further discussion? Is there any objection?
To adopt all these amendments, Mr. Chairman?
As amended.
All amendments. All these. I have two questions before I object.
It's section 6.
Depending on the answers.
Okay.
Section 6, all the way through. Were these amendments, I was not in attendance at the previous hearings, were these amendments before the committee and testified to by members of the profession which they regulate? Or is this the first time they've been raised during the hearings on this bill?
Well, the amendments were presented to the members of the committee some time ago.
No, I realize that. That's not my question. My question is, were these amendments in the hands of those witnesses who testified on this legislation, who are members of the profession which is here addressed, and did we get input on these amendments from the members of that profession?
Well, the answers are no, as far as I know, and no.
That's respective.
I object.
No.
I object.
Okay, well, I guess the point you raised, Representative Richards, is one that is a procedural point that can be troublesome. The bottom line, pardon the old term, becomes, as amended, gentlemen, is there any reason why these amendments, regardless of the procedural situation she just described, is there any reason these amendments should not be adopted as amended?
The only objection, Mr. Chairman, would be, I think the point that Representative Richards brought up, I'm a lawyer, not a body man, and I don't live in the trenches every day doing this kind of work, and you're essentially asking me to bind my group, you know, by saying these are yay, nay, or whatever, without ever having gotten any testimony on them. Now, it's difficult for me, without, I think, putting myself in a malpractice situation, to say these are fine.
Well, if it's...
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Brother.
Now, I think the legislative process would grind to a halt if prior to any amendment they had to be referred to all the people that were interested and we'd take testimony on it. This is not an uncommon occurrence, it seems to me. The only question is whether it does so much damage that it takes the bill on a separate course.
Well, I guess, Representative Rutherford, I would say that it's a major departure from the original concept of the bill. And that is certainly within the committee's prerogative. I think the relating clause is adequate to make these amendments germane. The issue really is the same amendments essentially failed in another committee of the House in a separate bill. And because there are some, as I remember, some severe problems when you get down to the nitty-gritty of operating a business with what appears to be, to all of us, who are lawyers or other professionals, reasonable language. And what I'm simply saying is if the committee chooses to adopt them, which you may well do, I simply do not want to say that they're with our consent, because I don't know if they're good, bad, or whatever.
Do we have a motion before the committee, Mr. Chairman?
Yes. The question is on the amendments as amended. Is there further discussion?
Call for a question.
Is there any objection?
I object.
I object.
Further objection? Further discussion on the bill as amended.
Chairman.
Mr. Blumenauer.
I would move the amended bill to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Blumenauer moves.
Have we adopted all the amendments to this one? Okay, I would move the amendment.
Representative Blumenauer moves Senate Bill 718 as amended to the floor to be engrossed with a due pass recommendation. Is there further discussion?
Just one remark, Mr. Chairman, before we vote.
In all fairness, Tom, we heard a lot of testimony on these particular points. This isn't as though it's a 11th hour and 59 minutes departure from some of the problems that are attendant to this whole mess. And there's a lot of testimony to this effect. I think this gets in an avenue of trouble or source of trouble that is part and parcel of this whole difficulty. I don't think it's unfair. If it is unfair, we'll be back.
Well, I appreciate that, Representative Bugis. You know, I think that we're big boys and we're going to live with the law as it exists. And we know we will retain the credibility to come back here in 2 years and tell this committee what's gone on. And we're going to come back with better statistics and better information. And I think that the bill will have the effect of improving the standards of insurance carriers, body shops, and improving consumer knowledge. And frankly, I think the most important thing is improving consumer knowledge, because if consumers knew a little more, this bill would never have been here.
Question is on the motion to report the bill to the floor as amended to be engrossed in the due pass recommendation. The clerk will call the roll.
Levenauer?
Aye.
Bugis?
Aye.
Longmire?
Aye.
Lombard?
Aye.
Richards?
Aye.
Rutherford?
Aye.
Myers?
Aye. Case settled. Committee will be in recess until the House will resume at 3 o'clock.